This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly on FM 90.9. And our guests today are three members of the Baroque Artists of Champaign-Urbana. Charlotte Maddox on the harpsichord, as they say in the jazz world, on this and that. And Ben Hayek is on the viola da gamba, which will come up in conversation. It's a beautiful-looking instrument. And Amanda Pond playing the Baroque flute. And these are all period instruments, and that's a big part of the point of this concert. But the other point of this concert is to have, as they say, a truly magical experience at Busboom Castle, which is a place a little bit north of Mahomet. The concert is going to be on Sunday, June 14th at 3 in the afternoon, and you're going to need special transportation to get there, and you'll even get to go over the only functioning drawbridge in the United States. These are all little marketing points for the Baroque Artists. And as is this event here, we're in Charlotte Maddox's studio, actually, over at Smith Hall on the University of Illinois campus. We've got some tunes to play for you as teasers for the concert. So thanks for your willingness to set up in a small space on a hot day and play some music for us.
We're happy to be here.
Charlotte, what's the musical impetus behind the program for this particular concert?
Well, in keeping with the wishes of Chester Allwiss, who is the director of the BACH, this concert will celebrate the 300th anniversary of the death of Handel, who was born in Halle in 1685, the same year that Johann Sebastian Bach was born, and died in London, his adopted city, in 1759, 300 years ago. So the concert will feature primarily the works of Handel, chamber works for flute and continuo, and I'll be playing some solo harpsichord works as well.
So for those who haven't heard the term, or who maybe have heard the term but never really knew what it meant, as I didn't for years and years and years, continuo.
Continuo is short for basso continuo, continuous bass, and in the Baroque period it was customary for the harpsichordist to play the bass line along with the harmonies above the bass, which may or may not have been indicated by figures to show what chords to play. But the right hand then would take the chords or the harmony, and the left hand would take the bass line, which in the case of Handel tends to be very interesting. It's very contrapuntal and full of vitality. He writes wonderful bass lines. It was also customary, not always, but in many cases, to have the bass line doubled by a melody instrument such as the bassoon or the cello, or in this case, the viola da gamba. So that's what we've chosen to do here in our concert.
Why don't we launch right into some music before we talk a little bit about the specific instruments that you're playing, because they're all beautiful to look at and beautiful to hear, as you are about to find out. And there's lots of interesting things to be said, but let's listen first. What's our first teaser piece here?
Our first teaser is a sonata for flute and basso continuo, number 5 in E minor, known as Opus 1, number 1A. And we'll start with the first movement, which is marked Larghetto.
And it's music by Handel, played by members of the Baroque Artists of Champaign-Urbana on Live and Local on FM 90.9.
Thank you.
We heard a couple of movements from a flute sonata by George Frideric Handel as played by members of the Baroque Artists of Champaign-Urbana. The flutist, Amanda Pond, playing on a Baroque flute, and harpsichordist is Charlotte Maddox, and Ben Hayek is playing the viola da gamba. We're actually sitting in Charlotte Maddox's studio on the University of Illinois campus. The Baroque Artists giving a concert of chamber music, mostly by Handel, on Sunday, June 14th at the mysterious-sounding Bus Boom Castle. That's a Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock, and we'll give you some contact information if you're interested in tickets at the end of this segment of Live and Local. You're hearing us on WILL, FM and HD Urbana. It's FM 90.9. This program's your connection to local music, and I'm Kevin Kelly. They're playing on instruments that are, I assume, copies of period instruments as opposed to actual instruments from the period. And I'm looking at a perspective that I never really have gotten to see in a harpsichord much before, which is actually the keyboard side. And these wonderful-looking inscriptions, the one word of which I recognize, which is the name of my home state of Pennsylvania, Charlotte Maddox. What does it say in there, and what does it mean?
It was usual for harpsichord builders to put their name and the date and place the instrument was built on the nameplate, in the key well of the harpsichord. So this particular instrument, which belongs to the University of Illinois, was built by Willard Martin, who is a builder in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania.
And he's changed his name for the purposes of the inscription to Willert Martinus.
Well, you know, all trying to be authentic.
Faciebat, which means made by.
Right. So yeah. Turning it into a sort of Latin, and Latinized version.
Can I read my Roman numerals? 1980-something. 1990.
87.
1987. And it's a beautiful-looking instrument. And before we actually started this segment, they were doing some practicing. And I also got to watch Charlotte do the thing that she said is really most boring about being a harpsichordist, but might be a fascinating aspect for those who aren't harpsichordists. And that is that you have to tune, you have to know how to tune the thing yourself and fix it yourself, because you had to do both of those just a little bit ago.
Right. Well, you know, some of you are aware that Smith Hall is not air-conditioned this summer because they're renovating. They're working on the HVAC system. So it's hot in here, which makes it even more difficult to keep in tune. So right before we rehearsed, several strings had gone quite out of tune, and some of the notes weren't working, which involved replacing broken plectra. The instrument is sounded by depressing a key, which then activates a jack. Inside the jack, there is a plectrum, which plucks the string. These days is generally made of plastic, Delrin, but of course in the 17th and 18th centuries was made of crow quill, the feathers of a crow.
Oh.
And I understand that New York turkeys provide good crow quill for those interested in quilling their instruments in feathers.
Well, we'll keep that in mind all this, I'm sure. So you just carry these plectra around with you in case you have to replace one?
Well, I always take a toolkit when I am around a harpsichord, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, now, Ben Hayek, you are the viola da gambas. Do you have to be similarly prepared to repair things on your instrument?
Well, contrary to modern instruments, this instrument has gut strings on them, which not only makes them harder to keep in tune, but they also break more often. So I do like to keep some extra strings around, probably more often than I would like my modern cello, which has all metal strings.
And you have to keep extra strings, because compared to your modern cello, which has only four, this one has, am I counting, seven?
Seven strings, correct. The family of instruments usually has six, but the bass, which is what I'm playing, has a seven string added in a lot of cases, so you can play even lower than even the cello.
So the family of instruments in this case are the viols. This is the viola da gamba, meaning?
The viol that you hold with your leg, basically. I think they both mean about the same. Just depends on what country you hail from. So if you say viols or you say viola da gamba, Usually you're referring to the same family of instruments.
The ones that are held by the leg, as opposed to...
Da braccio, there's a viola. Da braccio is what the modern day viola, what we would consider the viola, is with the arm.
And so, this would be a little large to hold with your arm. But there's a number of interesting aspects visually of watching you play. And I don't think I've ever been this up close on a viola da gamba either, for that matter. So you actually cradle it between your legs. There's no peg like you have in a cello.
Correct. There's no end pin that, of course, all cellists use these days. So you do have to hold it just with your legs. It's a little bit more work.
I remember years ago, Yo-Yo Ma decided to make a, I think it was recording Vivaldi maybe, on a Baroque cello. And I'm not sure, the biggest thing he did was get rid of the end pin, because the thing he really talked about a lot was just the whole difference of trying to hold the thing with your knees. And if you're not used to it, that's, I would imagine, to be a bit of a distraction. But you've been playing, Ben, Baroque cello for quite a number of years. You started at the University of Illinois when I first met you, just as a regular old cellist. What got you interested in this particular kind of music and playing in a Baroque style, and particularly on a Baroque instrument?
Well, I was just sort of asked to play for a group that was concentrating on some early music. I'd always listened to that earlier music, Baroque music, but didn't have quite the love for it that I have now. And so just playing with that group, I discovered that I enjoyed the variety and the smaller numbers that you encounter with earlier music. It's not a big orchestra, and we involve singers and wind instruments quite frequently. So it's not your standard, okay, string quartet music that, you know, a lot of people who are playing in high school sort of thing would, that's what they would fall into. So I like the variety of instruments and just the smaller number of people, so you can feel like you're a bigger part of what's going on.
Well, very often, whether it's chamber music or even if it is a small Baroque orchestra, you'll have just one cellist or one gambist. And so your role is pretty important, to say the least.
Sure. I mean, I think everyone would admit to that, not just the people who play. But, yeah.
Well, I just think if you miss that bass line, everything's done for, really. So, Amanda Pond, you're playing the Baroque flute, which is made of wood and...
Made of wood, and well, this particular one has plastic joints, but sometimes made of finer materials.
And you called it... flauto traverso, is that the
right.
Do I have the right term?
I think so.
Meaning?
Meaning you hold it across your body rather than in front of you like a recorder.
So is this kind of the successor to the recorder, or was it just another family of instruments?
It's another family, but sometimes music was written interchangeably for either this flute or the recorder. Like some of these Handel sonatas can be played on either.
And how do you like playing in the Baroque flute compared to the regular, which is usually how I see you?
It's really fun, actually. It's been fun to be an amateur again, and it has a whole different set of challenges, and I'm really enjoying it.
So there are holes instead of keys for the mm-hmm. most part. Do I see one key at the
one
end?
One key, yeah.
For your right little finger.
That's right, for a D sharp.
We're doing our best to, since we're not on television, we're doing our best to ask you to describe these things. Up close, since I haven't been up close on these things very much, only from a distance, as I'm now realizing. We're talking to members of the Baroque Artists of Champaign-Urbana, Amanda Pond, the flutist. Do you say flutist or flautist or flautist? What do you call yourself?
Flutist.
Good, I like that. And then Ben Hayek playing viola da gamba, Charlotte Maddox-Mersch on the harpsichord. And you're going to be playing a concert together with a great deal of more music on Sunday, June 14th at 3 o'clock at Busboom Castle, which is located somewhere near Mahomet. And if you want to get to this concert, you can't even drive because there's no parking, and so you're going to have to take special transportation, for which you're going to have to contact the Baroque Artists, which you can do by visiting their website at baroqueartists.org. Let's hear another tune. What have we got? More music by Handel, I presume.
Oh, yes, certainly more music by Handel. Honoring Handel, of course, on his 300th anniversary of his passing. We could continue on with another movement of the E minor, if you like, and then...
That's entirely up to
move
you.
Move to another sonata.
I'm just the
all
audience.
Right. This is the presto, using, of course, the Italian tempo word, which was becoming popular in the 18th century. But in fact, underlying the this movement is a gavotte rhythmic structure. So you'll hear a gavotte at a presto tempo.
Which is a particular kind of dance, which, since we're not on television, we won't make you do. Love those pieces with those very fast bass lines. I always think of some of the concerti grossi, concertos grosso, or great concertos by Arcangelo Corelli, particularly the ones in the minor keys that always seem to have those characteristic bass lines. And I think that was some of the music that actually got me personally excited about Baroque music, were those concertos by Corelli. And Ben Haick, tell me if I'm remembering right that. Was your first experience with this stuff in a group called the Corelli Quartet or Corelli Trio?
Here at U of I, yes.
We Chad had Piper was a violinist.
Correct. He was a great impetus for me in terms of getting really involved in Baroque music and getting excited about it.
And one of the great things, too, about the Baroque artists and other Baroque performers around here is that over the years, y'all have gotten so much better. Because I remember at the time, people were tuning endlessly because either we're trying to tune new instruments down because typically Baroque pitch is a little lower. And it was, the concerts were almost excruciating at the time because you spend half the time tuning. And you're so much a better player than you were at the time because you had so much experience and it's always been a pleasure to hear you play. I mean, I say this to Ben because I've known him longer and seen him play over the years quite a lot. And Charlotte is still relatively new to me, although you've been at the University of Illinois now how long?
I think it's almost 10 years now.
Is it really? No kidding. Charlotte, what is your technical position? You're head of the...
I'm chair of the organ harpsichord division.
But you're also director of the... fill in the blank.
Are you thinking of the period instrument group?
Yeah, what do you call that?
Well, we've called ourselves Concerto Urbano. But yes, we do. I founded that, I guess, when I came, and we've grown. And I never allow tuning on stage unless it's absolutely necessary.
Such as in, we might have to do it during a break here, I don't know, because it's getting awfully warm in this space,
yes, it
although
is.
It still sounds pretty good. But doesn't the University of Illinois, now that you're here, have an early music program where folks are not quite?
Well, I am the early music program, but there's a lot of interest, and I must say the last performance given by Concerto Urbano in the spring was absolutely stellar, quite fantastic. So I'm thrilled with how the interest has grown. I do teach performance practice classes here, which started out with 3 to 5 people in them, and now we have 30 to 40. So there has been a burgeoning of interest in early music since I have come. So I'm pleased about that.
Well, as I recall, that's a big part of why you were brought, because you had that knowledge that the school is certainly looking to expand a bit. By the way, we haven't said it in a bit, you're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9, members of the Baroque Artists of Champaign-Urbana. Bach, they like to call themselves, B-A-C-H. Charlotte Maddox, harpsichordist. Ben Hayek, viola da gambist. Is that the right term?
Sure.
More or less. Amanda Pond, the flutist. I do have two other questions for Ben, because this has always fascinated me about Baroque instruments. The bow is very different, which, again, if you're just in an audience, you may not actually be able to see. Why don't you describe that for us a little bit? It's very different from playing a cello.
Well, there's, I guess, two main differences. It's physically different. A lot of early bows started out very convex and sort of like the one you would shoot an arrow with, but gradually became more and more flat. And what most people play with these days is usually a transition bow, where it's a little bit convex, although almost straight, and then we actually use this screw mechanism to tighten and loosen the hair, which is a nice convenience that they didn't have for a while. So physically it's a little different. And then compared to how I played on the cello, what everyone is used to seeing on the violin family and the cello is the overhand position, overhand grip. And they actually held the bow in an underhand grip, where you place it sort of in the crook of your hand between your thumb and your first finger. And your thumb and your first finger hold this actual wooden stick, and then your middle finger, and some people use the ring finger as well, actually touch the hair. And you can actually not only push down with the stick, but also with the hair. And it changes things a little bit differently. The stronger stroke on a modern instrument, a modern bow, is down bow, whereas when you play underhand, it's the up bow. So some things change a little bit. And but otherwise, it's a lot of things are pretty much the same.
And it's shorter.
It can be shorter. They also played a lot of dance-type music, and that kind of music was easier to play on a shorter, lighter bow, where we didn't have to make these really long fortissimo, really long sounds that we might play in an orchestra.
There weren't as many long romantic singing lines.
Depending on who you would ask, but probably most would agree. Yes.
So the whole underhand, overhand thing is kind of the difference between throwing a baseball versus throwing a softball, or pitching a baseball versus pitching a softball.
Correct. I mean, it's almost the same thing, but to the knowledgeable person, you can tell there's a difference.
Yeah. What have we got next on our menu for today, musical menu for today?
Since you've been talking to Benjamin Hayek, perhaps he'd like to play a solo for you on
Would he?
The viola da gamba.
Would he?
Sure.
What are we going to have here?
I'm going to play just a solo piece by a German, Carl Friedrich Abel, who sort of goes down in history as close to Bach. His Bach's gamba sonatas are usually credited to his father, who was in Germany at the time. So sort of a family of virtuoso gambists. And so here's just a little bit of a few movements from one of his solo sonatas. Thank you.
Benjamin Hayek playing music by, what was his first name? Last name was Abel.
Carl Friedrich
Abel. About 40, 50 years after Bach and Handel, I guess. Yeah. Birth, anyway. Which is one of the pieces that you can hear in its entirety on the concert on Sunday, June 14th, by the Baroque Artists of Champaign-Urbana, part of a chamber concert that also includes solo works, obviously, one with for viola da gamba, and some for the harpsichord, which will be played by Charlotte Mattox. We're in her studio here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. She's professor of harpsichord and chair of the keyboard division at the organ and harpsichord division, which consists of two people. So
that's
somebody
right.
has to be the boss, right?
At the we're University few, of but we're mighty.
Yeah, there you go. What have you, and this is Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. What have you got for us, Charlotte?
I'm actually going to be playing an 18th century transcription by William Babel of an opera aria from Handel's Rinaldo. I think it's fairly well known that salon transcriptions of operas for keyboard were very popular in the 17th and 18th centuries all over Europe. William Babel was Handel's accompanist and so worked closely with him and came out with a collection of transcriptions of airs and overtures from his operas. So this is from the Rinaldo opera, a famous aria that I think you'll recognize.
Thank you.
That was Charlotte Maddox playing music by George Frideric Handel. And I'm looking over your shoulder. You played a lot of extra notes there that aren't on the page. How did you get away with that?
I wasn't aware that I was adding that much, but perhaps over time, with age, comes abandon. I think these transcriptions actually are very interesting because they do give us a little window into the style of embellishment that was in vogue at the time of Handel. And in fact, several of the slow movements from his harpsichord suites, of which I'll be playing one in the concert, are very plain, which is why I think they're used for teaching pieces. They're wonderful teaching pieces for, you know, little 5-year-old, 6-year-old pianists. But in the hands of a harpsichordist, they become different pieces when you add ornaments. And learning about embellishment is just one of those things, along with learning how to replace plectra that we do as harpsichordists. So it just becomes a part of our vocabulary.
As we discussed earlier in the show, if you missed it, well, you missed it. I have one other question for Charlotte. You're playing a harpsichord that has two keyboards. What does the other one do?
The other one does the same thing the first one does. They're called a lower and an upper manual because, as you see, one is lower than the second manual, which is a little higher, just like on an organ. And they play a different set of strings, so there's a different timbre, much as you would have on an organ where you might put on a different stop.
Are you able to show
so
us?
I can demonstrate that.
Yeah.
So the second manual, what I played second, is more nasal in tone due to the fact that the string is being plucked closer to the nut, closer to the end of the string, and that creates a different timbre. And when used together, it makes a fuller sound.
So now there you were actually playing the lower keyboard, but it was playing the upper at the
right.
same time.
We call that coupling the keyboards. You can couple them together so that when you play the lower, you actually are also playing the upper.
That's very clever.
It is a clever design.
Yeah, it is. It makes for a wonderful sound. Well, we have just about enough time for one more piece, which will bring everybody together. We're listening to members of the Baroque Artists of Champaign-Urbana, teasing us with some pieces going to be in their concert on June the 14th. Charlotte Maddox, the harpsichordist. Benjamin Hayek. Have I been saying your name right this whole time, I hope?
Yes, there's many ways to say my name correctly. Yeah,
but that will work, okay.
Doing.
I'm very glad. On the viola da gamba, and flutist is Amanda Pond. And you're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. It's more music by Handel from what piece?
The C major sonata. We're going to be playing the fifth movement, the Allegro. Thank you.
final gavotte, which is a type of Baroque dance from a C major flute sonata by George Frideric Handel, played by members of the Baroque artists of Champaign-Urbana. Flutist Amanda Pond, viola da gambist Ben Hayek, and harpsichordist Charlotte Maddox. They're going to be performing that and much, much more on Sunday, June 14th, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, at Busboom Castle, described here as a truly unique space featuring the only functioning drawbridge in the United States. That's a little bit north of Mahomet. And if you'd like tickets to and information about how to get there, which you're going to have to do as a group, believe it or not, visit the Baroque Artists website. It's www.baroqueartists.org. And we appreciate very much all of you. Actually, Charlotte, you're lending us your studio for us to come over and record this program. It's been a lot of fun, and thanks very much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks.
It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. A little bit from the movement called Blues, from the Sonata for Violin and Piano by Maurice Ravel, Vadim Repin, the violinist, and Boris Berezovsky, the pianist, here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Our programs today are made possible with support from the Great Impasta, a family-owned restaurant serving foods from northern Italy for more than 25 years. The Great Impasta is now open in their new location at Lincoln Square in downtown Urbana. More information is available at 359-7377.
WILL depends on support from listeners like you to keep broadcasting great music. I'm station manager Jay Pierce. If you haven't renewed your membership this year, please join us June 11th for One Day Thursday. Call in, renew your membership, or make a first-time gift. Your support means more of the music and performances you want to hear. You can also give online right now at willpledge.org. And thank you.
Next weekend, not this coming weekend, but the following weekend in Springfield, is going to be a jazz and blues festival, the Washington Street Jazz and Blues Festival. Had a chance to talk yesterday morning by telephone with Christina Steelman, who is executive director of the Springfield Area Arts Council, about the council itself, some of the activities musically going on in Springfield and the surrounding area, and, of course, about the Washington Street Jazz and Blues Festival. I started simply by asking her to tell us a bit about the Arts Council itself and some of its activities.
We're a service organization in that while we do present some great programs, our primary purpose is to be a resource and advocate for the arts organizations, artists, and then our community at large. And we serve Sangamon and Menard counties.
Can you give some examples maybe of how that service works?
Absolutely. Most importantly, particularly right now in some trying financial times, we do offer grants. We have three grant programs, the Community Arts Access, and that is for arts organizations and social service agencies that do grant arts programming in both of our service counties. We also have the City Arts Access Program, and that's specific to Springfield, and that's for, again, arts and social service agencies for specific programs. Sometimes it's even for rent assistance or general operating dollars. We also have the Rosie Richmond Artist Advancement Award, and that's a monetary amount that goes out to an artist to help them take the next step. And it's been used to prepare a portfolio to begin the process of recording a new CD to get some extended training, you know, at a workshop or some type of class that helps you just move on to the next step in your professional career.
And for advocating for arts organizations in general, aside from those specific programs, are there more general ways in which you work with people?
Absolutely. For children, you know, we're seeing a big cut in arts budgets in schools everywhere, and we want to make sure that kids still have access to professional artists, so we are putting artists in schools through our arts and education program. And depending on the school situation, that's something where we'll match the amount that the school may have to put towards this type of program, or we pay for it entirely. And we use storytellers and musicians and visual artists and get them out into schools, actually in three counties. In addition to Sangamon and Menard, we're in Macoupin County as well. And for advocacy, our organizations in this area really range from the very small, very small budgets, no professional staff, people completely volunteer run, to very large, such as the Sangamon Auditorium, and everything in between. And not everyone has the resources, perhaps, to have their own website or to have the staff that you need to get some things done. And we can help with that. We can either help ourselves or we can hook you up with the people that can help. So, you know, that's one way to be an advocate. Another way is to make sure that our artists in this area have opportunities. Sometimes we create them ourselves, and sometimes we find them. We make connections between people who call us and say, I need a caricature artist, or I need a band for a party, or I need something, and we can make recommendations and connect them with an artist that might be right for whatever they're looking to do. And we also work very closely with the Illinois Arts Council and the Illinois Arts Alliance to make sure that our voices are being heard in the state.
Can you give me an idea, and our listeners an idea, of maybe the range of some of the musical organizations in and around Springfield?
Oh, absolutely. How much time do we have? I'm amazed. For a town this size, to understand that we have our own professional symphony, ballet company, summer musical theater at the Muni, a variety of really top-notch theatrical groups, plus this broad array of folk bands, period bands. So the Prairie Strings come to mind, where they dress in costume and play a very, you know, specific period of music. We have a woman who sings the songs of Australia, rock bands, cover bands, original bands, jazz and blues, and they're all around the city and really top quality performers.
And I will probably be interested in asking you some specifics about some of these folks, maybe for showing up on this program at some point. This is, for listeners just tuning in, live and local on FM 90.9. We're talking with Christina Steelman, who is the executive director of the Springfield Area Arts Council, and we are about to get to the reason we're talking at all, which is the Washington Street Jazz and Blues Festival, which is coming up not this weekend, but the following weekend on Saturday, June the 13th. Starts at 6 o'clock. It's at the Old State Capitol Plaza in Springfield. And how long has this festival been going on?
This will be the 23rd.
No kidding.
Jazz and Blues Festival. It's morphed and developed a little bit over the years. It started off as a jazz festival, and we were just finding after some time that there was a real interest in adding another component to it and expanding the festival a little bit. So we've mixed it up a little bit, and we do three jazz bands and three blues bands on two stages, which is kind of fun. You know, when you go to these day-long festivals, sometimes there's that lag time between bands, and you have to wait for the stage to be reset. Well, one is setting while the other's playing, so really a band finishes and you turn around and it starts up again, and it's just a lot of fun, and things keep moving really quickly.
And where do the bands come from?
Well, it varies. Last year we had a few from out of the area. This year almost all of them are from this particular area. And that's just I don't want to say luck of the draw, but we do have a great committee made up of professional musicians and some of our committee and board members and some other good stakeholders that have some knowledge of jazz and blues music who listen to, I believe this year we had about 35 submissions, and from those we can only pick six. And the six that came forward, five of them are right here from the Springfield area.
Can you say, give some of the names of the bands, just in case folks listening will have heard of some and they can get stimulated to show up?
Sure, sure. Well, I do want to say first that we've added a component this year, and typically our gates open at 5:30, and they still will for general admission, but we're opening it a little early for families. And at 4:30, there'll be a chance for families with young children to come in. There are some music-themed crafts, and there'll be a very special performance by the Springfield Area Youth Jazz Band. And they're just fantastic. They've played for us for a variety of different projects that we've had. And their teachers really not only teach them the music and how to play jazz, but really get into the background and where jazz comes from and how do you improvise. And it's very exciting to see these young people. And we want other kids to see their peers up there playing jazz music. So that's at 4:45. But the full festival gets underway at 6 o'clock. We open with jazz with Zach Radwine Trio. Zach is a really interesting young performer, and he is young, wonderful pianist, classically trained, but has been studying jazz for some time, too. He's opened with his trio for the Yellow Jackets and has had a really great experience. It's going to be a great way to kick things off. And again, after seeing those young children play jazz, to move, this is the next step, really. And it'll be great to see such a young person leading a really fine, fine mainstream jazz trio. Let's see, 7 o'clock, we're going to switch over to blues, and we have Black Magic Johnson. They've performed at Millennium Park in Chicago and have been influenced by, well, and I feel I must say this because she's just passed, the great Coco Taylor.
Did she really?
She did, and it's, you know, I was listening to that on the radio and thinking, my goodness, here we have this blues festival right around the corner, and she's going to be on everyone's mind. But they've been influenced by her and Lonnie Brooks and some other really wonderful traditional blues bands. They're a big favorite among some of the motorcycle clubs that seem to descend in our area and just have a great following. Let's see, 8 o'clock brings us the Dookie Jazz Quintet. And this one is a new one for us. They're based largely out of Bloomington, Illinois. So these are our outsiders. But really fantastic sound. It's a very brass-heavy group that has a little bit of Latin and groove undertones. They talk about being reminiscent of the Blue Note era, but we haven't seen too much use of that kind of undertone of Latin jazz styling. So really exciting. That's at 8 o'clock on the jazz stage. 9 o'clock, we're switching over to Susie and the Smokers, some of Springfield's best blues musicians. And I've noticed a lot of these bands really share musicians, and they work with each other, not just with these bands, but others. And Susie is a killer blues vocalist, and you know, she really lights up the stage. So if you like that kind of vocal, female lead vocalist for a blues band like a Coco Taylor, Susie and the Smokers are going to be a great bet for you at 9 o'clock. Then we're really changing things over. 10 o'clock brings us Senses, and this is a, I don't even know how to describe them. They're jazz-based, but really defy genre. They use funk, blues, rock, soul. The leader of this band is David Kane, and he's the resident artist here at the Hoagland Center for the Arts in Springfield. And he does vocals, saxophone. He has the only Candy Apple Red saxophone. So visually, it's really cool. Synthesizer and a fantastic backing of people who've played with the best, toured with the best. It's really going to be exciting, and he adds a dancer. Our local ballet company has a wonderful company member, and she does some really great fusion dancing to go along with the music. And to close everything out, at 11 o'clock, Tombstone Bullet will be on the blues stage. And they've only been around for a few years, but again, have pulled together this great group of musicians. I don't know how they all find each other, but they do, and we're glad. They're starting to really make a name for themselves here. And they're, you know, people like Susie and the Smokers and Black Magic Johnson have been around for a really long time, and it could be hard to move in there. But Tombstone Bullet's doing a great job. They do a lot of originals and a lot of covers, and I think it'll be an exciting way to end the evening.
Well, as your website says, six bands, two stages, music, food, and fun. It's the Washington Street Jazz and Blues Festival in Springfield, Saturday, June 13th, starts at 6 o'clock. Well, you said things sort of open up at 5:30, and what time did you say the kids' show starts?
The gates will open just for families at 4:30.
And that is for the youth jazz band.
That's right.
Christina Steelman is executive director of the Springfield Area Arts Council and joined us today on Live and Local. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bit of a Trio Voronezh is the name of that group playing an Argentine dance by some anonymous composer. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. We have news headlines coming up in just a minute and a half. I'll have a weather forecast in just a moment. And Gillian Martin has classical music for you starting at 1:06. I'm not going to have time on the show today. It's been so full for a full calendar, but I do want to mention that the University of Illinois Krannert Center Summer Studio Theater season is opening tonight with a play called Tuesdays with Maury by Jeffrey Hatcher and Mitch Albom, and also in the rotation this weekend, The Mystery of Irma Vep. That starts on Saturday, and a repeat of that on Sunday, and then starting in a couple of weeks, it's I Am My Own Wife by Doug Wright. That's the summer studio theater season at the Krannert Center. For more information, call 217-333-6280. On Monday, I'm going to be away next week. We'll be airing a series of chamber concerts by the Chicago Chamber Musicians, and I'll be back with you actually on Thursday for a special fundraising edition, and then the following Monday. This afternoon will be sunny, the high 76. Tonight, partly cloudy, the low 53. Tomorrow, partly to mostly sunny with a slight chance of a passing shower or thunderstorm in the afternoon, the high 82. We're at 73 degrees. It's WYLL 90.9 FM in HD Urbana, operating translators W293 AF Danville and W266 AF Urbana.